Chapter 98. How it is possible, and how it is impossible, for God to do something outside the order of His providence. From what has been said, we are able to consider a twofold order: the one, dependent on the first cause of all things, so that it comprises all; the other, a particular order, dependent on a created cause, and comprising such things as are subordinate to that cause. The latter order is manifold, in accordance with the diversity of causes to be found among creatures. Yet one such order is subordinate to another, even as one cause is subordinate to another. Consequently, all these particular orders are comprised under that universal order, and are subordinate to that order whereby things are dependent on the first cause. We have an example of this in civil affairs, for there is a certain order among all the members of a household according as they are subject to the head of the house. Again, the head of the house together with all the other heads of houses in the same city have a certain order among themselves, and in relation to the governor of the city, and he again together with all the other governors in the kingdom is subordinate to the king. This universal order, in respect whereof all things are ordered by divine providence, may be considered in two ways, namely, with regard to things subject to that order, and with regard to the reason of the order, which depends on the principle of the order. Now we proved in the second book, that the things themselves which are placed in order by God, proceed from Him as from an agent that is not necessitated either by nature or by anything else, but from His simple will, especially as regards the original establishment of things. Consequently, God can do certain things besides those which are comprised under the order of divine providence, since His power is not bound to the latter. On the other hand, if we consider the aforesaid order with respect to the reason dependent on the principle, then it is not possible for God to do anything outside that order, because this order, as we have proved, proceeds from the knowledge and will of God, who directs all things to His goodness as their end. Now, it is not possible that God do anything that is not willed by Him, since creatures proceed from Him, not because it is natural that they should, but because He wills them to, as we have proved. Nor is it possible for anything to be done by Him that is not included in His knowledge, since nothing can be willed that is not known. Nor again is it possible for Him to do anything as regards creatures, that is not directed to His goodness as its end, since His goodness is the proper object of His will. Since God is utterly unchangeable, He cannot possibly will that which He willed not before, or begin to know something anew, or direct it to His goodness. Therefore, God can do nothing but what is comprised in the order of His providence, even as He cannot do but what is subject to His operation. And yet, if we consider His power absolutely, He can do other things besides those that are subject to His providence or operation, but He cannot do what has not been eternally contained in the order of His providence, because He is unchangeable. Through failing to observe this distinction, some have fallen into various errors. Some, in an endeavor to extend to things themselves the unchangeableness of the divine order, said that all things must of necessity be as they are, so much so, that some declared that God is unable to do except what He does. Against this we have the words of Matt 26:53: "Cannot I ask my Father, and He will give me presently more than 12 legions of angels?" On the other hand, some, thinking in their carnal wisdom that God, like carnal man, is inconstant of will, ascribe the changeableness of things subject to divine providence to changeableness in divine providence itself. Against this it is said, "God is not as a man that He should lie, nor as the Son of Man that He should be changed." Others again withdrew contingent things from divine providence. These it is said, "Who is he that hath commanded a thing to be done, when the Lord commandeth it not?" Chapter 99. That God can work outside the order imposed on things, by producing effects without their proximate causes. It remains to be proved that He can act outside the order imposed on things by Himself, for the order imposed on things by God is that lower things be moved by higher, as was shown above. Now God can act independently of this order; in other words, He can Himself produce an effect in inferior things, without a higher agent doing anything towards that effect. For the agent that works by natural necessity differs from the agent that acts by will, in that the effect cannot result from the former except according to the mode of its active power, so that the agent which has very great power cannot produce immediately a small effect, but produces an effect proportionate to its power. In this effect, however, there will be sometimes less power than in its cause, so that at length through many intermediaries a small effect results from the highest cause. But it is not so in the agent that acts by its will, because the agent that acts by its will can at once without any intermediary produce any effect that does not surpass its power. Thus the most perfect craftsman can produce a work such as an imperfect craftsman would produce. Now God works by his will, and not by necessity of nature, as we proved above. Therefore he can produce minor effects, that are produced by inferior causes, immediately without their proper causes. Again, the divine power is compared to all active powers as a universal power to particular powers, as is clear from what has been said above. Now an active universal power may be determined to the production of a particular effect, in two ways. First, by a particular intermediary cause. Thus the active power of a heavenly body is determined to the effect which is the begetting of a man, by the particular power seated in the semen. And thus again, the power of the general proposition in a syllogism is determined to a particular conclusion, by the application of a particular proposition. Secondly, by an intellect which apprehends a particular form and produces it in the effect. Now the divine intellect knows not only its own essence, which is like a universal active power, and not only universal and first causes, but also all particular causes, as we have proved above. Therefore God can produce immediately every effect that is produced by any particular agent. Further, since accidents result from the essential principles of a thing, it follows that he who is the immediate cause of the essence, is able to produce in a thing whatever results from its essence. For the generator which gives the form, gives likewise all the resultant properties and movements. Now, we have shown, 489, that God, in the original production of things, brought all things into being immediately by creation. Therefore he can cause an effect to result in anything whatsoever independently of middle causes. Besides, the order of things emanates from God into things according to the forecast of his intelligence. Thus in human affairs we see that the head of the state imposes on the citizens the order preconceived by him. Now the divine intellect is not necessarily confined to this particular order, so as to be unable to conceive any other, since even we are able by our intellect to apprehend another order, for it is intelligible to us that God might make a man of earth and not of seed. Therefore God can produce an effect without the inferior causes to which that effect is proper. Moreover, although the order imposed on things by divine providence reflects the divine goodness according to its mode, yet it does not reflect it perfectly, since the creature's goodness does not reach to an equality with the goodness of God. Now, that which is not perfectly represented by one copy, can be represented again in some other way besides, and the representation of the divine goodness in things is the end of their production by God, as above stated. God's will is not confined to this particular order of causes and effects, as though he could not choose to produce an effect in lower things immediately and independently of other causes. Further, all creatures are more subject to God than man's body is to his soul, for the soul is proportionate to the body as its form, whereas God surpasses all proportion to the creature. Now, sometimes when the soul imagines a thing and is strongly drawn towards it, the results a change in the body in the direction of health or sickness, independently of any action on the part of those bodily principles, whose natural function is to cause sickness or health in the body. Much more, therefore, by the divine will can an effect be produced in creatures, independently of the causes which in the course of nature produce that effect naturally. Further, according to the order of nature, The active forces of the elements are subordinate to the active powers of heavenly bodies. Now, sometimes the power of a heavenly body produces an effect proper to elemental forces without the action of an element. Thus the sun heats without the action of fire. Much more therefore can the power of God produce the effects of created causes without any action on their part. If, however, anyone were to say that since God has implanted this order in things, He cannot produce in them effects apart from their proper causes without a change in himself, he can be answered by referring to the very nature of things. For the order imposed on things by God is in keeping with that which is wont to occur in things for the most part, but it is not everywhere in keeping with what always occurs, because many natural causes produce their effects in the same way usually, but not always, since sometimes, though seldom, it happens otherwise. Whether on account of a defect in the power of the agent, or through indisposition of the matter, or by reason of a stronger agency, as when nature produces a sixth finger in a man. Yet the order of providence does not therefore fail or change, because the very fact that the natural order, established according to what happens for the most part, happens at times to fail, is subject to divine providence. Wherefore, if it be possible for the natural order to be changed by a created power from that which is of frequent to that which is of rare occurrence, without any change in divine providence, much more can the divine power at times work apart from the order assigned by God to nature, without prejudice to his providence. In fact, he does this sometimes in order to manifest his power, for by no other means can it better be made manifest that all nature is subject to the divine will, than by the fact that sometimes he works independently of the natural order, since this shows that the order of things proceeded from him, not of natural necessity, but of his free will. Nor should it be deemed a paltry reason that God should produce something in nature in order to manifest himself to the minds of men, since it was shown above that all corporeal creatures are in some way directed to an intellectual nature as their end, while the end of the intellectual creature itself is the knowledge of God, as we have proved. It is not strange, then, if some change be wrought in a corporeal substance, in order to bring the intellectual nature to the knowledge of God. Chapter 100. That what God does beside the order of nature is not contrary to nature. It would seem, however, necessary to observe that although God sometimes does something beside the order assigned to things, he does nothing contrary to nature. For since God is pure act, whereas all other things have some admixture of potentiality, it follows that God must be compared to all things as the mover to the thing moved, and as the active to the potential. Now, when that which in the natural order is in potentiality with regard to a certain agent, is acted upon by that agent, this is not contrary to nature simply, although sometimes it is contrary to that particular form which is corrupted by such action. Thus when fire is generated, and air is corrupted through the action of the fire, both generation and corruption are natural. Consequently, whatever is done by God in created things is not contrary to nature, although it may seem to be contrary to the order proper to a particular nature. Again, since God is the first agent, as we have proved, all subsequent agents are likened to his instruments. Now, the purpose of an instrument is to serve the action of the principal agent while it is being moved by it. Wherefore the matter and form of an instrument must be such as to be suitable for the action intended by the principal agent. Hence it is not contrary but most becoming to the nature of an instrument to be moved by the principal agent. Neither, therefore, is it contrary to nature that creatures be moved by God in any way whatsoever, since they were made that they might serve him. Further, even in corporeal agents we observe that the movements resulting in inferior bodies from the influence of higher bodies are neither violent nor unnatural, although they may seem unbecoming to the natural movement which the inferior body has, as being proper to its form. For we do not say that the ebb and flow of the sea is a violent movement, since it results from the influence of a heavenly body, although the natural movement of water is only in one direction, namely to the center. Much less, therefore, can whatsoever God does in any creature, be described as violent or unnatural. Besides, the first measure of every essence and nature is God, as the first being, which is the cause of being in all other things. Since then we judge of everything by its measure, we must regard as natural to a thing that whereby it is conformed to its measure. Hence whatever is implanted in a thing by God is natural to that thing. Therefore if something else be implanted by God in that same thing, it will not be unnatural. Moreover, all creatures are compared to God, as works of art are compared to the artist, as appears from what we have already said. All nature is the work of the divine art. Now it is not inconsistent with a work of art that the artist makes some alteration in his work, even after giving it its first form. Neither, therefore, is it contrary to nature if God does something in natural things, other than that which occurs in the ordinary course of nature. Wherefore Augustine says, God the creator and author of all natures, does this nothing unnatural, because to each thing that is natural which is caused by him from whom is all measure, number and order in nature. Chapter 101. Of Miracles. These works that are sometimes done by God outside the usual order assigned to things are wont to be called miracles, because we are astonished at a thing when we see an effect without knowing the cause. And since at times one and the same cause is known to some and unknown to others, it happens that of several who see an effect, some are astonished and some not. Thus an astronomer is not astonished when he sees an eclipse of the sun, for he knows the cause, whereas one who is ignorant of this science must needs wonder, since he knows not the cause. Wherefore it is wonderful to the latter but not to the former. Accordingly a thing is wonderful simply when its cause is hidden simply, and this is what we mean by a miracle, something, to wit, that is wonderful in itself and not only in respect of this person or that. Now God is the cause which is hidden to every man simply, for we have proved above that in this state of life no man can comprehend him by his intellect. Therefore properly speaking miracles are works done by God outside the order usually observed in things. Of these miracles there are various degrees and orders. The highest degree in miracles comprises those works wherein something is done by God that nature can never do. For instance, that two bodies occupy the same place, that the sun recede or stand still, that the sea be divided and make way to passers-by. Among these there is a certain order, for the greater the work done by God, and the further it is removed from the capability of nature, the greater the miracle. Thus it is a greater miracle that the sun recede than that the waters be divided. The second degree in miracles belongs to those whereby God does something that nature can do, but not in the same order. Thus it is a work of nature that an animal live, see and walk, but that an animal live after being dead, see after being blind, walk after being lame, this nature cannot do, but God does these things sometimes by a miracle. Among these miracles also, there are degrees, according as the thing done is further removed from the faculty of nature. The third degree of miracles is when God does what is wont to be done by the operation of nature, but without the operation of the natural principles. For instance, when by the power of God a man is cured of a fever that nature is able to cure, or when it rains without the operation of the principles of nature. Chapter 102. That God alone works miracles. From what has been said it can be shown that God alone can work miracles. For whatever is entirely subject to an order cannot do anything above that order. Now, every creature is placed under the order established in things by God. Therefore no creature can do anything above that order which is to work miracles. Again, when a finite power produces its proper effect to which it is confined, it is not a miracle, although it may be wonderful to one who does not understand that power. Thus to an ignorant person it is wonderful that the magnet attracts iron, or that a small fish should stop a ship. Now every creature's power is limited to one definite effect, or to some. Therefore whatever is done by the power of any creature whatsoever cannot be properly described as a miracle, although it may be wonderful to one who does not understand the power of the creature in question. But that which is done by the power of God, which, being infinite, is incomprehensible, is truly a miracle. Moreover, every creature requires in its action a subject on which to act, for it belongs to God alone to make something out of nothing, as we proved above. Now, that which requires a subject in its action can do nothing but those things to which that subject is in potentiality, since the agent acts on the subject in order to bring it from potentiality to act. Therefore, even as a creature cannot create, so neither can it do in a thing, save what is in the potentiality of that thing. But in many miracles wrought by God, something is done in a thing that is not in that thing's potentiality. For instance, that the dead live again, that the sun recede, that two bodies occupy the same place. Wherefore such miracles cannot be wrought by any created power. Further, the subject acted upon is ordered both to the agent that brings it from potentiality to act, and to the act to which it is brought. Accordingly, just as any particular subject is in potentiality to a particular definite act, and not to any act, so it cannot be brought from potentiality to a definite act, except by some definite agent. For agents must needs differ according as they introduce different acts. Thus, whereas air is potentially fire or water, one agent makes it to be actually fire, and another makes it to be actually water. Likewise, it is clear that corporeal matter is not brought to a perfect actuality by the sole action of a universal power, and there must needs be some proper agent whereby the action of the universal power is determined to a definite effect. Nevertheless, corporeal matter can be brought to a less perfect actuality by the universal power alone, without a particular agent. Thus, perfect animals are not formed by the power of a heavenly body alone, but determinate seed is necessary, whereas the power of a heavenly body, without any seed, suffices for the generation of certain imperfect animals. Accordingly, effects produced among these lower things, if they be of a nature to be wrought by universal higher causes, without the action of particular inferior causes, can be produced in this way without any miracle. Thus, it is not a miracle that animals be formed from putrefaction without seed. But if they be not of a nature to be produced by superior causes alone, then particular inferior causes are required for their perfect formation. Now, there is no miracle if an effect be produced by a higher cause, by means of its proper principles. Therefore, it is altogether impossible for miracles to be wrought by the power of the higher creatures. Moreover, seemingly these amount to the same: the production of a work out of a subject, the production of that to which the subject is in potentiality, and the orderly production of something through definite intermediary stages. Because a subject is not in proximate potentiality to the ultimate effect until it has arrived at the middle stage. Thus, food is not in immediate potentiality flesh, but only when it is changed into blood. Now, every creature needs a subject in order to produce something, nor can it produce other than that to which the subject is in potentiality, as we have shown. Therefore, it cannot produce anything without bringing the subject to actuality through definite intervening stages. Therefore, miracles which consist in something being done without observing the order in which it is naturally feasible, cannot be worked by the power of a creature. Also, there is a natural order to be observed in the various kinds of movement. The first is local movement, hence it is the cause of other movements, because in every genus that which is first is the cause of all that follows in that genus. Now, every effect that is produced in this lower world must needs result from some generation or alteration, and consequently it must be caused through something that is moved locally, if it be the effect of an incorporeal agent which, properly speaking, is incapable of local movement. Moreover, no effect that is caused by incorporeal substances through corporeal instruments is a miracle, since bodies have no operation that is not natural. Therefore, created incorporeal substances cannot work miracles by their own power, and much less corporeal substances whose every action is natural. Therefore, it belongs to God alone to work miracles, for He is above the order which contains all things, as one from whose providence the whole of this order is derived. Moreover, His power, being absolutely infinite, is not confined to any special effect, nor to the producing of its effect in any particular way or order. Wherefore it is said of God in the Psalm, "Who alone doth great wonders." Chapter 103. that spiritual substances do wonders which, however, are not miracles properly speaking. It was the opinion of Avicenna that matter is more obedient to separate substances in the production of an effect than to contrary agents in matter. Hence he states that sometimes, at the apprehension of the aforesaid substances, an effect ensues in this lower world, such as rain, or the health of a sick person, without any corporeal agent intervening. He regards as a sign of this the fact that when our soul is of strong imagination, the body is affected by mere thought. Thus a man while walking on a plank at a height, easily falls, because through fear he imagines himself to fall, whereas he would not fall, were the plank placed on the ground, so that he would not fear to fall. It is also clear that the body is heated at a mere apprehension of the soul, for instance in lustful or angry persons, or again, becomes cold, as happens in those who are seized with fear. Sometimes too, through a strong apprehension, it is inclined to some illness, for instance fever or even leprosy. In this way, says he, if the soul be pure and not subject to the passions of the body, and strong of apprehension, not only its own body is obedient to its apprehension, but even external bodies, so much so that a sick man be healed or something similar occur, at its mere apprehension. He holds this to be the cause of fascination because, to wit, a certain person's soul being deeply affected with malevolence, exercises a baneful influence on someone, especially on a child, who by reason of the softness of the body is most impressionable. Hence he maintains that much more, without the action of a corporeal agent, do certain effects result in these lower bodies, at the apprehension of separate substances, which, he says, are the souls or movers of the spheres. This theory is consistent enough with other opinions of his, for he holds that all substantial forms emanate from a separate substance into these lower bodies, and that corporeal agents merely dispose matter to receive the impression of the separate agent. But this is untrue according to the teaching of Aristotle, who proves that the forms which are in matter do not come from separate forms, but from forms in matter, for thus it is that we find a likeness between the maker and the thing made. Moreover, the comparison with the soul's impression on the body does not advance his theory very much, for no impression is made on the body as a result of an apprehension, unless united to the apprehension there be some emotion, as of joy, fear, desire, or of some other passion. Now these passions are accompanied by a certain definite movement of the heart, the result being an impression on the entire body, either as to local motion, or as to some alteration. Hence it still remains that the apprehension of a spiritual substance does not make an impression on the body, except by means of local movement. As to his remark about fascination, this is not due to the apprehension of one affecting immediately the body of another, but it results from that apprehension affecting the conjoined body through the movement of the heart, the influence of which reaches even to the eye, which is able to work evil on an external object, especially if it be easily impressionable. Thus the eye of a woman in her menses infects a mirror. Accordingly, except through the local movement of a body, a created spiritual substance cannot, by its own power, induce any form into corporeal matter, as though matter were in this obedient thereto, so as to become actuated by a certain form. For it is in the power of a created spiritual substance that a body should be obedient to it in respect of local movement, and by moving a particular body locally, it applies certain natural forces to the production of certain effects. Thus the art of the smith applies fire to make the iron malleable. But this is not miraculous, properly speaking. It follows, therefore, that created spiritual substances do not work miracles by their own power. And I say by their own power because nothing prevents these substances from working miracles, insofar as they work by divine power. This indeed may be seen from the fact that, as Gregory states, one order of angels is especially deputed to the working of miracles. He also says that certain saints sometimes work miracles by power, and not merely by intercession. We must observe, however, that when angels or demons apply natural things in order to produce certain definite effects, they employ them as instruments, Just as a physician uses certain herbs as instruments for the purpose of healing, now, from an instrument there proceeds an effect, not only in proportion to its power, but also in excess thereof, forasmuch as it acts by the power of the principal agent. Thus a saw or an axe could not produce a bedstead except through being applied by craftsmanship for that particular effect, nor could natural heat produce flesh, except by the power of the vegetative soul that employs it as an instrument. It is therefore reasonable that certain higher effects should result from these same natural things, through spiritual substances employing them as instruments. Accordingly, although such effects cannot be called miracles absolutely, since they result from natural causes, yet are they wonderful to us in two ways. First, because these causes are applied for the production of their proper effects by spiritual substances in a way that is strange to us, even so the works of skillful craftsmen seem wonderful to others who see not how the work is done. Secondly, because the natural causes employed for the production of certain effects are invested with a certain power through serving as instruments of spiritual substances, and this comes nearer to the nature of a miracle.